pocket to the shores of Orange Beach and all points in between. An insider's perspective on Alabama politics. It's the Jeff Poor Show.
I don't think Hank done it this way.
Good morning. Welcome to the Jeff Poor Show on FM Talk 106.5. Happy Thursday morning to you. Ascension Technologies text line 251-343-0106. That is how you get in touch with the program. You get in touch with me. Hit me up on that text line. Coming up here in just a little bit, Todd Stacey, Alabama Daily News. Our usual Thursday guest. Let me push you back a little bit. He is moderating a panel, I believe, but we'll hear from him. I got to catch up with him last night. The battle for Goat Hill legislative softball game. Maybe we'll talk about that more in a little while. Also, coming up on the program today, Jerry Carl, our congressman from the 1st Congressional District, will call in. And then we'll wrap it up in the 11 o'clock hour, the official Democrat response of the Jeff Poor Show with Parker Griffith. That's coming up here on the program. Tuscaloosa today, performing some of the 18-19 duties. So as these things could go, who knows what kind of internet connection is, if it's thriving or if it's just not very good, is kind of at the mercy of that on today's show. But we will persevere. Yesterday, Montgomery, a couple of things we'll talk about real quick with that. First off, the... there's a bunch of small bills. There's nothing really that is, there's nothing like lottery or school choice. There's some things that deal with voting integrity, and it got contentious at times. I think probably the ones more apropos right now that's getting a lot of buzz, and we're going to get Senator Barfoot on to talk about it at some point in the near future. But he's got a bill that would increase penalties for those engaging in crime, but doing it under the banner of gangs or under organized. Well, and he goes through a list of, they try to make a list of what is appropriate, what isn't appropriate, what would get you a heightened, stiffened penalty and what wouldn't. So you're thinking, in the wake of Dadeville, well, what do we think of this? There's problems with gangs. So Senator Barfoot, however, getting some pushback, primarily from Democrats, surprise. Bobby Singleton, the minority leader, and Roger Smitherman, think this is just targeting black people. Surprise, surprise. So that was the big dust up yesterday. But I'll run through this real quick, if I could. How it defines a gang member. If you meet, and this is, if you meet three or more of these criteria, the state of Alabama will deem you participating in some kind of gang activity, which makes you eligible for a heightened crime situation. So it's adopts the style of dress of a gang, adopts the use of a hand sign identified by, used by a gang, as a tattoo identified as used by a gang, associates with one or more known gang members, is identified as a gang member by physical evidence, has observed a company of one or more known gang members four or more times, kind of lays out the groundwork for that, and then finally has authored any communication indicating responsibility for the commission of any crime by a gang. So, gangs in Alabama. And how that is how that will be combated. And I you know, you can say, well, this isn't just a problem or a solution looking for a problem. We find out, and there's three guys arrested now for this shooting in Dadeville. It was gangs, then maybe this will be a deterrent. I'm of the opinion that these things, these knee-jerk reaction laws are nothing but that. And I'm always very, 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 very reluctant to get excited about those. Anyway, so yesterday, if you weren't listening, the three arrests at the Sweet 16 birthday party shooting, and if you weren't listening yesterday, how put off with Aaliyah I was. Not so much Aaliyah, the people that worked there, just the spokesman and sort of the way the way that he conducted business at that press conference to announce the arrest. You got like an announcement that we have people in custody. Then you got a lecture about morality and a lecture about decorum as the spokesman for Aaliyah sees it. Supposed to be. And that's, you know, nothing like getting a lecture from those guys about how reporters should act. And then he called the press conference off. But just very, very disappointing. By the way, back to Montgomery. There's a few ballers out there in the legislature, and then there's just some guys that, a lot of fielding errors. Well, last night at the Biscuit Stadium, got to watch nothing exciting like Chris Elliott bowling over Reed Ingram at home plate like the year earlier. But it was a blowout. Senate beat the House 12-6, which is remarkable because there are 105 members of the House, 35 members of the Senate. So you would think, well, just sheer statistics would suggest there would be more athletes on the House side. But 2 years in a row for the Senate, much less crowded dugout for sure for the Senate. And they prevailed. They just kind of strung together a couple of big innings, and now you have it. So they did it for charity, sort of like the congressional baseball game they do every year in Washington, D.C. Sean and I got to go to that a couple of years ago. No appearance by Ivy, even though Biden went to the one we were at. No appearance from Ivy last night at the Biscuit Stadium. But a funny thing about that, there was a lot of law enforcement on hand. So they're being extra careful last night as well there in Montgomery. 251-343-0106. Donald Trump continues to string together Florida-centric endorsements. Picked up another congressman from Florida today. This is a very wise strategy from the Trump guys. If whatever you want to say about Trump and the way he acts, and you don't, he's running a smart campaign right now. Like, his people realize, okay, he's got these minuses. He's got these things he's got to overcome. DeSantis is a threat. So they're trying to, rather than change Trump and who he is, because they're never going to do that. You're never going to change what Trump is. Then why not go after your top opponent, try to neutralize the threat there? And that's what they're doing. First off, they're cutting him off from his base in Florida. So he's losing. DeSantis is losing a lot of his Floridian support. Yeah, Congressman Greg Stubbe really spoke harshly of DeSantis. Something else that really hit him on DeSantis, the governor of Florida. He was the flooding in Fort Lauderdale last week, and he was away. So they're taking on his state on. And this is Trump state as well. But you ask a lot of people in the federal game about DeSantis. Rick Scott and DeSantis have a feud going. I'm not sure what Marco Rubio thinks. But a lot of his fellow Floridians just don't speak or think very highly of Ron DeSantis, the governor of Florida. And this is probably something that should have been considered or will be considered, I guess, if ultimately DeSantis decides to run for president. Meanwhile, Trump is, he's aware of this. He's getting the endorsements from all the Florida delegation. He's really, really milking the New York City indictment. So for all the knocks on Trump and the weird things he does, he is, he's got some smart people running his campaign, if anything. And it looks like he's trusting them to do what they got to do. So in this early stage, you wouldn't have thought, but it really looks like Trump's getting it together. And sitting here watching it, though, I was talking to somebody last night about this. DeSantis supporter was like, well, just wait. When DeSantis rolls out, he'll get a big bump. He'll have a bunch of endorsements. You don't understand. There's a lot of people out there that just have Trump fatigue, and we're going to, you know, we're going to capitalize on that. But right now, I know, and here's the problem for DeSantis. All you guys that don't want Trump and would like a DeSantis, I mean, he's losing ground day by day by day, and the only way he can make it up, he can't do what he's doing. It was smart for a little while to kind of lay low, but he's got to start going on offense. You don't really go on offense unless you declare. You got to raise money, and you got to start spending money and countering some of the Trump attacks. It's a Trump machine. You don't go without being president for 4 years and have some kind of political empire or remnants of a political empire you could use it. He's using it. Meanwhile, Biden continues to flail. If Biden continues to flail enough, a midterm election is much different than a presidential election. Even though the Republicans did not do that well, more people will be engaged. More people are paying attention that maybe it will kind of accelerate the Biden spiral. So if you have another Biden-Trump matchup, do you like where you're at? You like where you're at? We have a Republican right now. I mean, there's a couple of candidates out there playing the game. Nikki Haley. Play the Veep Stakes game. Pence will probably announce in the next few weeks. He's good for 12% or so, maybe. He'll be mid-tier, but he'll be the only mid-tier candidate. And then DeSantis may be mid-tier before it's all said and done. But as you know, they don't vote on anything till January of next year, and it's just April of this year. It really picks up in the summer. What you're watching right now, other than Donald Trump is running a real campaign, is the sort of play for the big donor money and getting that together. You try to impress people that will write you checks, essentially. 251-343-0106. We'll be right back. This is the Jeff Porsche Show on FM Talk 106.5.
But I can't say the same for me. I've done it many times. Somebody take me home.
Living on the road, my friend, was
Welcome back to Jeff Moore Show on FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for staying with us on this Thursday morning. Maybe we will be joined by Todd Stacy. Maybe not. Saying his panel is going long, so we'll see. 251-343-0106. That's how you get in touch with the program. Text line, preferred mode of communication. Let's look at some text here. Roy in Spanish Fort. So Greek fraternities are gangs now? Well, I guess if Greek fraternities go on crime sprees, if Greek fraternities go on crime sprees and shoot up a dance hall or rob people or deal drugs, they're probably going to be prosecuted under this law. But I don't think they have that problem with the Greek system. Just saying, maybe, you know, but, yeah, Roy, do they do, I don't know. They did check three or more of those boxes. Let's see here. Unnamed texter writes, I'm with Trump. Red flag laws need to be added. Trump is absolutely right on this. Red flag laws on firearms. John writes, I believe that maybe extra time should be tacked onto someone videos their own crime or has videoed. Yeah, John, you're right on this one. I am backing you on this. Also, John writes, would this include factions such as MAGA, Antifa, BLM, or the Proud Boys? Well, I don't know about all of those groups. I bet you could make a case for the Proud Boys. And maybe Antifa. The other are a little more general. I mean, Antifa's got a flag, the Proud Boys, but do they participate in the same kind of crime you would think of the Bloods and the Crips? John? I have a unnamed texter. I have a picture here. Oh, maybe that is the governor. I missed that. Let's see here. At the baseball game last night. Lloyd. This is untrue. Florida loves Ron. Lloyd, maybe the people do, but he is not getting... Ron DeSantis does not get a lot of support from the political class in Florida. It's in some ways it's the same as Trump was, but apply that to Washington D.C. I mean, a lot of the legislature goes along with you, but look at who Ron DeSantis' biggest like advocate in Congress was. Is when he ran in 2018. Was Matt Gaetz. First Congressional District of Florida. Gaetz is back in Trump. It's not as if, Democrats are really the problem here. I would like to see it. And I bet you if you polled it, it's closer than it ought to be. DeSantis, an immensely popular governor in Florida, but can he beat Trump among Republican primary voters? Captain Doug writes, good morning, Jeff. Hearing your discussion about the Trump campaign is attacking DeSantis, how do you think they will handle Nikki Haley? I think that Trump's keeping his options open. I think they want to go with a female running mate to soften his image. If you look back in 2016, trouble with Pence because he is having trouble with that element of conservatives. All right, we'll get a break in here. We'll be right back. Please stick around. This is the Jeff Moore Show on FM Talk 106.5.
Make it to work. They're always late. Living by the job in their news. Life in Dixie with these.
dried cotton in the ditch. We all picked the cotton, but we never got rich. Daddy was a veteran, a Southern Democrat. They ought to get a rich man to vote like that. Sing it. Song, song of the South. Sweet potato pie and I shut my mouth. Gone, gone with the wind. There ain't nobody looking back again.
Welcome back to the Jeff Forrest Show on FM Talk 106.5, 34 minutes after the hour on this Thursday morning. 251-343-0106, the text line brought to you by Ascension Technologies. Hit us up there. Still to come on the program, maybe Todd Stacy, maybe not. His panel's running long. Also, we got Jerry Carl, our congressman from the 1st Congressional District. That's in the 10 o'clock hour for certain, and then in the 11 o'clock hour, you can always count on a reliable official Democrat response on the Jeff Porter Show. Parker Griffith coming up in the 11 o'clock hour. So please, by all means, stay tuned for that. A couple more texts to get to here before we move on. Jerry says, they don't look Greek to me. I don't think that was the point. Jerry, maybe some of you aren't familiar with the sororities and fraternities. I don't know if you kid around or not, Jerry, but maybe, just for the sake of that, it is some of the sororities and fraternities on these college campuses identify with Greek symbols, and that's why they are called Greek. Let's see, Tim. System we have now rewards not having the family group. It's easier for the baby mama to get more benefits if she doesn't know who the daddy, baby daddy is. I mean, you're kind of jumping to a step there. And I'll tell you some of my experience here, just having worked with guys that know how to work the system. They will... These guys that get these women pregnant will still kind of function as their husband, but not make it official. So they, common law or, you know, they stay together as a couple sometimes, but don't officially get married. So you can collect more from the government. I mean, it's, especially if the quote unquote baby daddy is gainfully employed and brings home a check, what they'll do, I know guys have done this, and they'll use this, they'll operate the system that way. It's really like, you're just kind of amazed to hear it when these guys talk about it. It's remarkable that they know, well, they've understand, if we get married, and I don't think this is necessarily a good thing, but it doesn't mean that you have a bunch of daddy cats running around getting single moms pregnant. It's a system that is a perverse incentive for sure. But you do need a father figure. What is it? Jason Whitlock, I think he had to walk it back. You have this, the number of female African-American mayors in these big cities. And he called it the, where crime's on the rise. So Chicago, Atlanta, and whatever. But he called it the baby mama culture. So I'd say it's an interesting theory. I'll just leave it at that. 251-343-0106. That's the text line. That's how you get in touch with the program, if you so choose. So as I said earlier, a few bills. I want to get back to Montgomery real quick while I have the opportunity here. But there are you want to kind of be negative about the legislature, but they are doing some interesting things. I already mentioned the gang bill with Senator Barfoot. Barfoot also involved in the critical race theory ban, the divisive concepts ban. And this is important because We were going through this. One of our reporters was going through this, and he found how much money is being spent on DEI policies. And we may get into this here in a minute or two at colleges and universities in Alabama. So diversity, equity, and inclusion, ladies and gentlemen. These college campuses, and I maybe it was Ed Oliver told us this last week when we were at State House, that there's twice as many DEI employees as there are history employees at the University of Alabama. But they got to make sure everybody gets a fair chance. Everybody gets the fair opportunity. And they set up these bureaucracies, miniature bureaucracies, to ensure the diversity that we all need on our college campuses. So I'll go through these real quick. At Auburn University, the highest paid DEI bureaucrat, $275,990 a year. Chief Diversity Officer Taffy Benson Clayton. Not bad. Not bad for Auburn University. Probably, you know, kind of right in the middle there. Kansas, sweet Bill Plummer, let me thank you for your time. At Alabama, $300,000 for their Chief Diversity Officer. Get some others here in a minute. We'll be right back. This is the Jeff Bohr Show on FM Talk 106.5. For your time, you work a 40-hour week for a living. Just to send it on down the line. This is for the one who drives the big rig.
First thing I remember knowing was a lonesome whistle blowing and a youngin's dream of growing up to ride.
Welcome back to the Jeff Bohr Show on FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for staying with us on this Thursday morning. Thank you so much for listening. Always appreciate it. 251-343-0106, the Ascension Technologies text line, so you get in touch with the program. Broadcasting from Tuscaloosa today. One of the things I get to do, Republican women of Tuscaloosa County are hosting yours truly. I guess they don't get the Jeff Bohr Show, so they get to hear me speak for however long I am scheduled to speak. So here for that, on the road as duty calls, but thanks for bearing with us on a bumpy. It's always bumpy on the road. Anyway, so let's say before we went to break, guys, talking about so. There's a bill in the legislature that Ed Oliver, he's talked about it. He was on this show talking about it last week, but it's just these ideas of these divisive concepts. And I think some of these divisive concepts really lie within the bureaucracy of academia. What are they trying to do? Well, they have different motivations here. And let me explain to you what they're trying to do, because it's not as liberal, touchy-feely, feel-good as you might think it is. Well, why? Well, why do I say that? Well, the way these bean counters at these schools sometimes think, they gotta up their human rights campaign score. They gotta check all these boxes, and this is how they get higher rankings by some of the publications. You know, be it U.S. News and World Report or something, even you know the more prestigious ones. Say the University of South Alabama is the 75th most diverse school. It's in the top 1,000 or whatever. They come up with these just insane ideas, and it all adds up to say top 10 colleges, top 20 colleges, and I want to send my kid here, but top 10 most affordable colleges. So it's all about these kind of phony, baloney, made up, subjective criteria to get people to come to your stupid school. And these universities invest a lot of money in it because they for whatever reason think it drives enrollment. It drives also federal funding. that, you know, we need to give money to a school that has this number of African American students studying neurology or whatever it may be. There's all these different ways to game the system. So they create DEI offices in the, under the banner of we really are trying to increase diversity. We're trying to increase equity and inclusion on our college campuses. And some of the people working there really believe this stuff and they're really doing it. But the top brass of the university also sees an added benefit there for their institution. So they create this and they spend copious amounts of money on it. Say the top officer at Auburn makes about $276,000 a year. The top DEI officer at Alabama makes $298,000, about $300,000 a year. But hold on to your seat here at UAB. And this is how you know a lot of this is just tied to federal grant money, et cetera. $408,000 a year. The Associate Vice President of Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion was the DEEI office. Diversity, Equity, and Equity and Inclusion. They needed extra equity in their office. Mona Faud, $407,749 a year. She's pulling out $34,000 a month. And what are they creating out of this? They're not creating, I mean, universities don't create much, but they're not creating, they're teaching classes like vital sciences. This is DEI, guys. So the hope here is, some of this legislation, we can start seeing this rolled back. I don't think you can quite call it a crackdown, but it's just this absurd amounts of money being spent on these liberal tropes. It's not even global warming or climate change spending. It is just this idealism that they're throwing money at. At least climate change, they pretend to do some kind of scientific method. They pretend to do work. This is just making sure that you're fitting a quota. It is just bizarre. So legislature should have pushed back on this. The problem here for the rest of the they have a lot more power over a lot of universities in Alabama except for Auburn. And except for the University of Alabama, because those are the two charter schools of the Constitution, and their administrations would argue we're not beholden to the legislature because we're a state constitutional entity. Matt writes, "Gosh, dog, I'm about to apply to the DEI at Auburn." Leo, morning, Jeff. What does a chief diversity officer do? Is it a job to be racist? Do they judge people their color or skin and not by their character? They push paper, Leo. That's what they do. You think about that. At UAB, $400,000. But it's all this, guys. They do offer some value to the university. It's just value that I think it's unseemly. We are trying to build a student body based on some kind of numerology that fits nicely, neatly in a box. And it makes people in Washington, D.C., it makes bureaucrats in D.C. happy. And we have people that are paid really well to figure out how to do that. So you want to make $400,000 a year, be the DEI, chief DEI officer at UAB. Unnamed texter writes, they aren't paying those diversity political officers enough. They have been able to divide the country, more than all of the external enemies, we are literally falling from within. It's the people who set this up, though. You wonder, like, what are the motivations? And I don't think they say, they get up and out of bed in the morning, they're like, I want to contribute to the downfall of America, named Texter. It's just social engineering. It's not something the federal government needs to, but the problem starts with the feds. We don't, our society is doing less and less of meritocracy. It's just the American dream. You work hard and it pays off, essentially. Well, that's not good enough. You need, not everybody can work hard and or should have to work hard in some cases in the minds of the left. It's undermining that American ideal. And, you know, you think, well, we don't have to worry about that in Alabama. We're a Republican state. We're a conservative state. But apparently we do. I mean, these are the future leaders of Alabama that are being taught in this environment. The business class, the political class, they're all, you know, Alabama and Auburn up, right? Some come and go to Ivy League, but for the most part, the state's elite. And this is what we're teaching at that level. It's not what I studied in college. But you look at what the left's done and they start winning these elite institutions. And the ones that are always stick out of my mind, I mean, obviously Wall Street is leading left, but trying to, I think, make a buck by capitalizing on this. But if you ask them deep down and take the financial component out of it, then they lean left. Hollywood certainly has leaned left for about 100 years, right? Then you look at the political class. I'm not talking about Congress or just the White House, but let's look at Washington, D.C. and the surrounding counties. Blue, 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 blue for days. Loudoun County used to be the last red holdout in Virginia around the Beltway, but it is also now blue. And some of the worst policies at the K-12 level. So they've commandeered that. They've commandeered the academy. The right needs to hold some ground. And I think, you know, it used to be the military. But you look at the military, and I think even the brass at the Pentagon were like, you know, we need to wokeify the military. We have all these military, all these absentee ballots. We just lose in the military. How can we push a Democrat ideal with the military? Then you go up and down, and then it kind of runs over the middle class, who's not really part of any of these quote-unquote elite institutions. They just work a job, go to work, pay a mortgage, etc. Not really part of the big corporate environment. Maybe they work in retail for Walmart or something that leans left, but at least it's anti-union. And that in the end does disrupt the political system. It's just playing the long game. A day texter, just a thought. Build and renew delinquent licenses. Used to work in the criminal justice system. These people have broken the law at least once to get to this point. Many people, one, broke the law getting a ticket. Two, many don't pay the ticket. Three, DL's suspended until they are paid. To be being rewarded instead of punished for breaking the law. And we don't know all these people will work after their driver's license has been renewed. So let's listen to Senator Barfoot. He's also... you keep hearing me mention a guy named Will Barfoot. He is the chairman of the Senate Judiciary Committee, so he's involved in all of this stuff. And this driver's license bill, he's explaining it. He's for it. He's sponsoring the bill. You can still be held in contempt of court. Everything is the same you have to miss 6 payments, he's explaining, before Aaliyah could suspend your driver's license.
They begin to run it on down the Mississippi.
But you can still be brought in.
We look down
so they're
the river and we see
they're
the
taking away the only component of the punishment they want to take away is the driver's license suspension. Is my understanding. We're going to get Sarah Barfoot on to explain it to us in the near future. Let's get a break in here. This is the Jeff Bourne Show on FM Talk 106.5.
We fired once more and they began to run it on down the Mississippi to the Gulf of Mexico.
Pocket to the shores of Orange Beach and all points in between. An insider's perspective on Alabama politics. It's the Jeff Poor Show.
I don't think Hank done it this way. No.
Welcome back to the Jeff Poor Show on FM Talk 106.5. Thank you for staying with us on this Thursday morning. Man, is it Thursday already? The week is flying by. On the road to Tuscaloosa today. 251-343-0106. That's how you get in touch with the program. Coming up in about 30 minutes, Congressman Jerry Carl will be with us from our own first congressional district. And then the official Democrat response to the Jeff Bourne Show, Parker Griffith, coming up in the 11 o'clock hour. But better late than never, joining us now, as we do on Thursdays, so we're pleased to be joined by Todd Stacey, Alabama Daily News. Todd, good morning. How are you?
Good morning, Jeff. I'm great. Yeah, sorry to be late.
Hey, man. It happens. Glad you could make it, though. Anyway, so, we spent some time at the State House yesterday. Wednesday's becoming my day up there. And there's no like big marquee legislation like a gambling bill or a school choice or whatever the topic du jour is, but there were some kind of controversial things going on in the Senate Judiciary Committee. I thought particularly this gang bill and the timing of it, assuming what happened in Dadeville was gang related. We don't know for sure, but it's looking that way. It comes at an appropriate time, I think. That bill that Barfoot's pushing, what do you make of it? And it seems like it's going to probably sail through the Senate.
Yeah, well, I spoke with Barfoot yesterday. His bill was in committee, passed through committee, but it was along party lines. The Democrats were not on board with this. But I think as it applies to Dadeville, and, you know, let's stipulate that we don't know all the facts, but we do know that there's been 3 people arrested, and 2 of them seem to be related. And so I think as it applies to that, based on what he's trying to do with this bill, it may be defined as gang related. And I think that's what he's trying to do is to strengthen the law to say, okay, right now crimes that clearly are gang related aren't classified that way and therefore don't carry the tougher penalties. That's one thing he's trying to change is to say, look, you know, if 3 or more people or whatever the numbers are involved in something and it's an organized thing, then yes, that's a gang and we should treat it differently than just a one-off unplanned crime. And so it very well could apply to Dadeville. I mean, obviously, I don't think it would be retroactive or anything like that, but it's the kind of activity that he is seeking to change. And so Barfoot represents Montgomery. There's no question that Montgomery has gang violence. It's a problem. Everybody understands that, including the mayor. I think it's the same way in other Alabama cities. So it's a big issue. I think this bill will move, but I've also heard that the attorney general is working on some different sort of legislation. But yeah, addressing gang violence is a priority in the legislature. And it was really before Dadeville.
Well, and like was listening to Capital Journal last night, they've tried this before, right? Something along these lines, and it didn't quite get there, but this looks like it's probably got a better shot.
Yeah, it's one of those things that they call it, you know, running out of time in the legislature, and it's, you know, a bill can go through the Senate or it can go through the House, and get kind of clogged up at the very end because, you know, so much other legislation is in front of it or bottled up, and there's just so few days left, so few hours left. It's one of the consequences of them going fast like they are, having these three-day weeks, essentially burning whole days without passing much legislation. They want to do it because they want to get through the session quicker. But when you talk about bills running out of time, that's why, because they've kind of burned days and wasted days previously in the legislature. So yeah, that was one. There's plenty of, I mean, it happens all the time. But I will say this, I mean, it typically takes a couple of years for a bill to get the kind of support it needs to actually pass. I mean, sometimes that's not the case. I mean, take fentanyl. That was pretty quick because everybody was in such agreement with this problem. But with typical legislation, including criminal justice stuff, it can take a while. And so I'm not surprised that it might take 2 years to pass the gang bill.
Well, tell me this. You mentioned the accelerated pace. I'm hearing that you're more pulling into this. This is going to slow down a little bit to maybe two-day weeks or something along those lines.
So, it's not to get too far into the weeds, but we have right now, for all intents and purposes, two-day weeks, because on Tuesdays and Thursdays, they are having long legislative days with, you know, 4, 5, 6 hours in the chamber, maybe even longer, actually passing bills. The Wednesday, they're using as a legislative day, meaning they're gaveling in, they're saying the prayer, they're saying the pledge and all that, but they're not doing a significant workload. And that's what I mean by burning the day. And so at the end of the session, they will have used their 30 days, but some of those, several of those days will have just been burned. So why I say that's essentially a two-day work week is for the staff and for the lobbyists and for even the members themselves, they don't have to do much on the floor those days, and that's sort of the point. But yes, the accelerated pace is a real strain on staff, on members themselves. It leads to mistakes. You know, if you're just going constantly for 3 days on end and have a full committee schedule, mistakes get made in the filing and the paperwork and all that kind of stuff. So it's there's a reason why they want to slow down.
Joined by Todd Stacey, Alabama Daily News, here on the program. Todd, the Ed Oliver divisive concepts bill, I mean, they tried last year. Does this look like this is the year? Representative Oliver seems to think it is. Another Barfoot bill, right? And it's gotten some pushback, obviously, and it's going to continue to get pushback. But is it clear to you that it's just going to be done this year? Is it they tell me it is?
I mean, at this point, I'd be surprised if it didn't pass. It's obviously a priority to Mr. Oliver and Barfoot, too. And so last year it passed the Senate, but did not pass the House. So when something like that happens, sometimes they'll say, okay, we all get it done in the House first, and then we'll, because we've already proven in the Senate we can pass that. Y'all get it passed in the House first, and then we'll take it up in the Senate. And so I see no reason why it wouldn't pass. It probably has plenty of votes. Now, look, it's one of those issues that it'll be a long day in the House because the Democrats will get up and, you know, vehemently oppose it. They'll use every tool at their disposal to delay it and filibuster. So it may even be a cloture situation where they, stop debate in order to pass the bill. I would not be surprised to see that happen. But at the end of the day, I don't see why Republicans wouldn't have the vote. At the same time, Jeff, the whole critical race theory as an issue has probably calmed down a little bit since last year. You know, that was really hot, 2021, 2022, kind of calmed down a little bit, maybe partially because the state school board has wouldn't ban it, by its own resolution. And so, it's not exactly a huge, huge issue, but still it's something I think Republicans will support. And I see no reason why it wouldn't pass.
Well, is it clear to you what the bill actually does, and I've heard competing versions of this, but some of these like DEI offices at some of these state institutions would go away or be scaled down dramatically. It's not just not teaching woke celebrations in fifth grade or whatever, that there's a lot more to the what it could do to the bureaucracy.
Maybe. I think to me what it starts is, you know, assuming this becomes law, is it starts an introspection, right? Like if there's a law in the books saying that you can't advance and teach policies that, you know, promote one race over the other, one religion, you know, over the other, things like that, then colleges and, you know, high school, whatever, agencies, companies, they're going to think twice about some of those policies. And if there are any in existence, it gives the state, you know, tools to go shut that down, whether that's the Attorney General or, you know, anybody else. So I would see it from that standpoint as it's a starting point to inspect some of those efforts you talked about to see if anything actually is being done like that.
Maybe it just means we're going to get a new employee, like a diversity or a divisive concepts, a law compliance officer or something. I mean, it's just that, you know, it could very well be that, but the intention, as far as I could tell from talking to Ed Oliver and Senator Barfoot, it was just some of this stuff at the college. He told me something that, and I don't know, this is a little surprising to me, that there are twice as many DEI department employees at the University of Alabama as our history department employees. And so they want to roll some of that back. But like I said, it's not clear to me whether this bill gets at that or not. But it's like you said, it's going to force some introspection, it seems.
Yeah, I don't think it goes so far as to outlaw departments or anything like that. It's just, you know, setting policy. And look, I mean, goodness, for as long as I've been around, colleges, you know, take every opportunity to add administrative staff. I mean, it's kind of gotten out of control. But, you know, I think they want to set the policy. Again, this is already policy for K-12 schools. They want to put it in state law to kind of double down on the point. But look, I think the point about college departments and things like that, that's part of a larger conversation about colleges that I think in the coming years you're going to hear more in the legislature in terms of how bloated is your administrative staff versus your faculty, and how much is, you know, with rising tuition and things like that, you know, I hear lawmakers talk all the time about how they're really bothered by that trend in higher education. And I wouldn't be surprised. It's not going to happen this year, but in the years to come, I think you might hear more conversation. And it's not all about DEI and all that kind of stuff. It's across the board, just sort of the bloated administrative state at a lot of universities.
Well, I tell you, it's going to be a fascinating thing to watch. So all those colleges in Alabama, universities, the public schools, except for Auburn, Alabama, they are constitutionally chartered. So I've heard this from lawmakers say, trying to rein some of this in, they're going to run into that problem where, say, Troy or South Alabama or whatever are governed by a different part of the state government than the flagship schools in Alabama who carry Todd, did you tell me what you think of this? I think like the UA system carries a lot of political clout around Montgomery.
Oh, absolutely. They both do. Both those universities do, but especially Alabama. So, yeah, anything like that would be tough to get. But, I mean, at the end of the day, the legislature is in charge, and the way they get what they want is usually through budgets. They control the funding, a lot of it at least. And so that's how they would, you know, be able to exact whatever kind of amount of flush from the universities that they would. But also the Commission on Higher Education. Jim Purcell there has talked a lot about the same issue. And you hit on a bigger problem, and that's governance. You know, take a state like Georgia or a state like Texas. You know, it's all governed by one board. Here in Alabama, we have every university has a different board of trustees, and that runs into problems.
Yeah, it's really fascinating. Like, there's the politics of like Montgomery and what we do every day. But these universities, they operate on a totally different level, different system. Sure, they get confirmed by the Senate or whatever the trustees do, but like these college politics, it's just it's fascinating. It requires a deeper understanding.
Yeah, look, we ought to make clear. Look, I think we have some amazing universities. I mean, I'm thinking right there in Mobile, University of South Alabama, which has just really made a ton of strides. So I don't want to sound like we're critical of some of our greatest assets, but there have been trends toward, you know, administrative bloat, and lawmakers pick up on that, especially when tuition hikes happen and their constituents don't like that, right? So you'll see more conversation about this.
Todd, before I let you go, folks want to know what's coming up on Capital Journal tonight, tomorrow night, and how they can sign up for Alabama Daily News newsletter, or let us know.
Absolutely. Tonight, we've got Philip Ensler. He's a Democrat from Montgomery, has some gun proposals coming out, so I'm really curious to question him about that. And aldailynews.com, you can sign up there.
Todd Stacey, ladies and gentlemen. Todd, thanks for making time.
All right, Jeff. Be good.
All right, we got to get a break in here. We'll be right back. This is the Jeff Poor Show at FM Talk 106.5.
I play guitar and I sing my songs in the sunshine. Captain and cloaks and barroom jokes keep me feeling fine. And there's always a stage and a beautiful
show at FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for staying with us on this Thursday morning, 251-343-0106. That's the Ascension Technologies text line. Coming up in the next segment, our good buddy Jerry Carl, congressman for the 1st Congressional District. That's here in just a few minutes. 251-343-0106, text line. Let's see here. David writes, I bet Jeff just had a small belt of indigestion, heartburn, when he said Todd Stacey said something nice about South Alabama. My angst, I don't quite say it's hatred of South Alabama, but my pettiness about the University of South Alabama. I'm a South Alabama graduate. I have now I'm on my wall in the Fair Oak Bureau, an Auburn Building Science degree and a South Alabama Communications Journalism degree hanging on the wall there. I still have a bad taste in my mouth about the way I left there. And we could talk about that story someday, but, the South Alabama probably not known for their A, politics, and B, journalism either. But I'm slowly getting over it. I did go to, went to South Alabama football game, playing Troy. I cheered for Troy. I'm still not over that. And then I did go the bowl game out at South Alabama. So I've been back twice now since the falling out. But I used to, when I was at South, guys, I ran the college newspaper there for a year. And I was an immature right-wing bomb thrower and culture wannabe. No doubt about it. I will readily acknowledge my shortcomings as a college student at the University of South Alabama, but lo and behold, they were brutal. They did not like conservatives at South Alabama, and it was a constant war with the faculty. I had one of the faculty members there called me a neocon a-hole. I got there, and I wanted to be like a sports writer, and got swept up into politics. It was just all anti-George W. Bush. And I said, you know, I'm gonna be the right winger here. And it kind of grew from there. And now you have the Jeff Poor Show and other conservative media functions coming out of South Alabama. So if anything, inspired that. But it was not a great experience. It wasn't the marketplace of ideas as advertised, guys. It was rough. And essentially, when I graduated, I was told, hey, don't come back. A teacher lost her tenure because of me. I published, do you remember the Muslim cartoons? Yeah, I got in trouble for that. I was always getting in trouble. You had to ask my old advisor, runs Land Yap, Rob Holbert, some of the war stories we had at the University of South Alabama back in the day. But that's where my heartburn come from. David asks, "What's wrong with being a conservative, Bob? Or you just don't do that on the campus? They don't like that. It's odd to have a newspaper functioning as sort of a conservative organ, like a conservative outlet on a college campus. That gave them heartburn, and now I guess I get the heartburn in return. We got to get a break here. We'll be right back. Stick around. This is the Jeff Moore Show on FM Talk 106.5.
So the story ends, we're told. I don't need your prayers, it's true. Save a few.
Mount Cheehaw is my Everest, and the Coosa is my now. Alabama's where I was born and raised, and I think I'll stay a while. We sing about sweet home and Dixieland delight. We tell stories about what goes on.
Welcome back to the Jeff Moore Show on FM Talk 106.5, 34 minutes after the hour on this Wednesday morning. We do appreciate you listening. As always, Ascension Technologies text line 251-343-0106. Still to come, the official Democrat response on the Jeff Moore Show in about an hour from now. Parker Griffith. Some of you love him, some of you really, really hate him. There doesn't seem to be any in between, but he'll be coming up here in an hour. In the meantime, I'm very pleased to have our next guest calling in here, DC, I assume, but Congressman Jerry Carl on the line with us. Congressman, good morning. How are you?
Good morning, Jeff. I am fantastic. We just took our last vote, so I'm actually sitting at the airport and waiting to get on my plane and come home for the weekend. I'm homesick.
Y'all wrap up pretty early today. I guess it's good when you don't have, when you have any sane actors running the House of Representatives.
I'll tell you, with us, and this is my first time to be in the majority, and we control the votes, and we control the time that the votes are taken, and the length of time that we're given to vote, and it just runs so smooth. We can actually set a schedule up. I can think of one back during COVID period. They've kept it open for 6.5 hours where we're doing 5-minute votes now. If you're not there in 5 minutes, they close it, move on. And you're going to miss some. I mean, somebody's perfect. You get frustrated when you do miss them, but you don't leave the floor. I mean, you don't leave the floor to go to the bathroom because you'll miss the next vote. They roll them real fast, and that's the way it should be. Then we can spend our time taking care of constituents' issues back in the office, or coming back to the districts.
Well, and you see that, and I guess we're 100 days in now officially, but with that rocky start, I think a lot of folks, is this going to be standard operating procedure with the speaker elections, how that was conducted? It hasn't been that at all, has it?
It has not, and I'll give credit to McCarthy. McCarthy has really, really been over backwards to try to accommodate and work with everyone, at the same time be a strong leader and lead. With the ceiling cap, where we're putting some final touches on that. The budget, I mean, we're trying to come together on that. I mean, there's so many things that his leadership's involved in trying to steer us in the direction they want it to go. But at the same time, he's wanting everyone's opinion. He's giving everybody a place at the table. We've got a handful that are very opinionated. He hears them out, and he tries to meet them halfway. He tries to work with them because they are here to represent their district. So if they're going to represent their district, we need to listen to, what their folks in their district, want done and how they want it done. Don't have to agree with it. But we can certainly try to work better together. McCarthy has done an incredible job working with the Democrats in that it's much more peaceful. We have their we allow them to have input. We give them 5 days to look over bills, to look over packages. They're still going to come after us. They're still going to disagree with us. But it's a whole different atmosphere, and I think it has everything to do with McCarthy and his leadership. And that's the first 100 days. We really expected a lot of problems. We live on eggshells up here. We're always worried that, this is going to run off the rails somewhere, and we're all going to start at war with one another. But again, McCarthy and their leadership, I was watching them today on the floor, and, you know, that handful of what we would consider, you know, rowdy people, all McCarthy's leadership team is sitting with them. Conversations are with them. You know, they want to hear what they've got to say on the floor and why they feel that way and bring it back to Kevin, and Kevin can help process that. And we can all sit down. We did it this week. We'll do it again next week. We'll all come together for an hour and go through a punch list of things we hope to accomplish. The ceiling cap was blew my mind how peaceful that one was. Everybody in the room agreed we had to put a package together to at least present to the Senate and get them to start negotiating with us. So, you know, everybody in the room agreed to that. We knew what we were putting together was not going to pass, but we made sure everybody's voice was heard in what we submitted. So I'm not here to sell McCarthy today, but I've really, really been pleased with what I've seen out of Kevin McCarthy.
You mentioned the ceiling negotiations or the ceiling process, the debt ceiling, that is. What I'm hearing, or whenever I see your colleagues go on TV, that there's just no buy-in whatsoever from the Biden administration. They're MIA. You guys are flying along. I mean, what's going to happen there, you think?
What the Democrats are trying to do is obviously make us the bad guys, be in the House, because we control the House. So we have got to put a package together. No one is not going to be processed the way we put it out. But we will send that package over to the Democrat side, to the Senate. And then it's on the President and the Senate after that. They won't even communicate with us at this point. So once we send it to them, if they do nothing with it, it's on them. It's not on us, because we've done our job. Same way with the budget. We're racing trying to get a budget put together. We want to get it to them. We don't want to wait for this last-minute stuff. That's one thing we're trying to change up here. We're trying to do things in a timely manner and not wait till the last minute with all the drama that's involved. And, at Christmas Eve, I was trying to catch a flight in Atlanta to make it home to my family because of the vote series and the way that the Senate kind of kicked it back to us. And of course, our Republican minority, they don't want to be there Christmas Eve either. But the Democrats find it quite liberating to be in total control of everybody's time and place. So we're trying to set a little different standard. We're trying to get it in a timely manner. I think that's what the taxpayers pay us to do, and we're going to do it. What they do with it after that, we can't control.
Congressman, you and I were talking during the break, some of the Fauci stuff and kind of what your intuition, what your spidey senses told you about what was going on there with some of the COVID-19 protocol. Well, here we are. It is April 20th, 2023. And while we don't know necessarily that there was a financial incentive, but it's looking like it's at least possible, there were a lot of things that the Fauci probably knew about that he wasn't forthcoming enough about with the public. What do you make of that? What do you think is going to come of that? Will we see the day that there is some kind of accountability for that era?
You know, in under today's laws, it's impossible, virtually impossible. Let me get a little bit of buffer in there on this. Virtually impossible to get access to his public, to his private funds and how he invests and manipulates. And I was the first one to bring up the fact, and I'll never forget it, riding down Airport Boulevard, that there's a financial interest here. And you know, that's what this is about, is the financial interest. So it's not going by the wayside. There's so much flying up here right now. And that was my biggest fear. I think another conversation I had with you, once we do take control, I don't want to chase too many rabbits. I want to focus on three or four. You know, let's get those accomplished and move on. But it seems to be a totally different scenario up here. Everything's being investigated. Everything's being looked at. And the American public wants it that way. I'm not saying that. But it's hard. I mean, I've got three committee meetings going at the same time. I'm literally, and thank God they're all on one hall, And I'm running from door to door for about 3 hours trying to make these committee meetings because there's just so much going on. We had 34 committee meetings, not me personally, but we had 34 committee meetings held in one day. One day. And we're looking into stuff. We're talking about stuff. We're obviously diving into budget. Being an appropriator, you know, my focus has got to be the balancing of the books, you know, the money. And you get a Jim Jordan, and Jim Jordan's the one, he's going to be doing the deep dive into the Hunter issue. He's going to be doing a deep dive into the judicial side, which I have no experience. And I can support him on the floor with votes and so on and so forth. And I do get briefings from him and Comer. And they've got some real interesting stuff coming up. Will we see something? I believe we will. Everybody says, what do I think? I don't, you know, up here in D.C., it's hard. It is so hard to get anybody nailed down because there's so many bureaucrats up here. I mean, I compare it trying to nail a piece of jello to a tree. And, you know, just by the time you think you got it stuck, it breaks loose and drops. And I hope we can do something with Fauci. I hope we see him brought to justice, because I think a lot of the stuff he did was criminal. I think he's changed the way we view society here in America, and the way we view people and how we do business. And it's horrible to think that one person has got that much power. But we allowed him to do it. You know, we allowed him to do it. We kind of buckled in. So, and I think everybody played a role in that. But with that said, we've got to make sure that it doesn't happen again. There's not another Fauci that pops up and tries to take over.
Joined by Congressman Jerry Curl here on the program. The Hunter Biden stuff, it's not as riveting to me as it is for a lot of people. It just seems, I don't know. We've been talking about it for so long. What do you see going on there? Comer everywhere talking about it. Is something you think going to come of that?
Well, Jeff, Comer was pretty smart in that. And he told me when he did this, we had a private conversation, and of course you don't talk about those until well after it's happened, but you know, the Bidens knew that he was going to try to get access to all of those different checking accounts. And they immediately started setting up roadblocks. What they did not anticipate is Comer had a link that had given them a list of all the banks. So he just went around them and went directly to the banks. And the banks were given documentations to turn that documentation over to the U.S. Congress before anybody had a chance to block it. So I haven't talked to Comer about what's in this. I think there's three more banks that have turned records over. I have no idea what's in that at this moment. I don't even want to speculate. But Comer is really committed to get to an answer on that. You know, the Hunter thing is almost like a soap opera, and I want to wait till the last episode to watch it. That's the way I feel. I watch it. Yeah, I keep an eye on it. I have to do everything up here. I call it homework. I have to, you know, keep a dive on it a little bit. But the Hunter thing, I mean, it's such an abuse. I mean, we uncovered one this week. Deb, I'm trying to remember the last name. I think it's Harlan. That's over the Interior Department. Come find out her daughter is on this anti-environment group. And just, I mean, she's caused a lot of problems up here. And no one's had any idea. So there's a lot of the family that works up here in some of this stuff that folks don't know about. I have no relatives that work in Washington, D.C., I promise you. But it gets frustrating because you run across things like that. And you say, well, ought to have a law to do that. No, we ought to elect some people that actually have common sense that can view that as being wrong. It doesn't have to be illegal. How about just wrong? How about some ethics? How about just looking at it going, you know, I've got no business paying my family member to do that just because they're my family member and they're convenient. And I don't know. We haven't found out that this young lady has received anything, just for the record. but she's certainly a huge part of this anti-coal, anti-petroleum group that her mother seems to be really trying to tear down and destroy. So I think it's going to be a story that's beginning to develop. Deb's a nice lady. I like her, but and I told her yesterday in the hearing that I think she's just way over her head. I think she's being used as a ploy here. And we've uncovered so many things. And I'll share some stuff with you in private, Jeff, sometime if you would like, simply because I don't know how deep you want to get in this today. But, you know, we just uncovered so many things in the environmental field that would, as a taxpayer, just infuriates me. Just infuriates me. So, we're trying. It's a constant struggle. It's 24/7.
Real quick, last question. We'll get you out of here on this. Mayorkas, the border, impeachment will start in the House. Is that got legs like I'm hearing?
That man needs to be gone. If they bring that to the floor, there's no doubt it will pass in the House. There's absolutely no doubt in my mind. And there will not be a single. I don't know. There may be a couple Democrats that may vote along with that, come to think about it. But I don't know where it'll go in the Senate. He's had a tremendous amount of pressure put on him over the last month. We're going to keep putting pressure on that man until, A, he gets to start doing his job right, which I don't think he's capable of doing it personally, or B, he's gone. He needs to be gone. We need somebody that actually cares about this country and cares about security of our border. We don't need this guy. I mean, I've been in numerous meetings with him, and all he wants to talk about is him, himself, and his family. It is the most bizarre thing I've ever seen. But his father was an immigrant from Cuba, and, you know, he always wants to talk about his father. That's great. We all need to be talking about our parents and show respect. But with him, he takes up the whole time talking about himself, you know, how important he is and how everything evolves on what his decisions are. And people like that scare me in politics. They really do. In the private sector, you can avoid them. You know, in up here in Washington, you can't avoid him. You have to work with him or try to work around him. And he's one that needs to be gone, though. There's no doubt in anybody's mind.
Congressman, you're always very generous with your time. We appreciate you coming on, and let's talk again
soon. Thank you, Jeff. All right, brother, you take care.
You do the same. That's Congressman Jerry Carl there on the line. We got to get a break in here. We'll be right back. This is the Jeff Porch Show on FM Talk 106.5.
Song of the South. Sweet potato pie and I shut my mouth. Gone with the wind. There ain't nobody looking back again.
All right, let's take it on down from Muscle Shoals through Decatur. Over Spanish Fort into Mobile, my hometown. Mr. T.
Welcome back to the Jeff Porch Show on FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for staying with us on this Thursday morning, 55 minutes after the hour. 251-343-0106. That's the Ascension Technologies text line. You want to get in touch with me? Use the text line. We're wide open till the bottom of the next hour. So keep them coming. I do appreciate it. Let's see what we got here. Dirt Digger writes, Jeff, you don't like University of South Alabama, but now you're on top of talk radio. I bet they reference you all the time, but probably won't admit it. How do they like it now that you are on your way? I've never been asked to, I don't want to toot my own horn here. I'm not big on doing that, but who are their successful journalism grads at South? I've never been asked to, our former editors of the paper there, which is now all online, I think, never been asked to come back. I don't blame them. I mean, I was immature and, it was a learning process, but, it's hard for me to think, well, you got to work with a guy like me. He's your customer. I'm paying. Well, I was a little scholarship for a little while, but you pay a tuition and you're trying to do what you think is the right thing. You're not just trying to be. I thought we had a good paper. I spent a lot of my own money to go cover sporting events and political things, trips to D.C. or whatever. I always try to like make they didn't want a right winger. His politics were wrong. So today I had to tell you about. I think it was the what was the first Sam Jones mayoral election and our coverage of that. I went to a runoff between John Peavy and Sam Jones, and our newspaper, for whatever reason, decided to endorse a mayoral candidate because that's what newspapers do. We endorsed John Peavy over Sam Jones, who at the time was on the board of trustees there, and that caused problems. That caused problems, and it wasn't supposed to. You know, we live in this naive world of First Amendment absolutism or whatever, and that's what you're supposed to be learning on the college campus. And we had the freedom of the press, and we had a newspaper editorial. It's like on page 3, and one of the trustees called me and my boss, and we weren't going to do that. That's not, you can't do that. And they were trying to tell us what we could and couldn't do. We didn't blow it up. I don't know why. I wish we had at the time, but well, another one of those like kind of distasteful moments of the University of South Alabama. But enough of that. We'll pick it up on the other side. A lot to get to. This is the Jeff Moore Show on FM Talk 106.5. Getting hammered, sitting right here at the floor of Bama.
Bucks Pocket to the shores of Orange Beach and all points in between. An insider's perspective on Alabama politics. It's the Jeff Poor Show.
I don't think Hank done it this way.
No. Welcome back to the Jeff Poor Show on FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for staying with us on this Thursday morning. We do appreciate it. Ascension Technologies text line 251-343-0106. If you want to get in touch with the program, that is how you do so. Coming up on the program about a half hour from now, former Congressman Parker Griffith, the official Democrat response of the Jeff Poor Show. So stay tuned for that. 251-343-0106. You want to get in touch? Let's see. Before we go to the text line, a few things going on just to catch you up on if you're just joining us. Some interesting things going on in the Alabama legislature, a gang violence bill, Senator Barfoot. I'm going to try to get him on to talk about it and a bunch of other stuff in particular. But that would stiffen the penalties for those associated with a gang engaging in some kind of criminal activity. Does it, it's not, and just to be clear here, it's not a reaction to Dadeville, but if it does turn out that this is gang related, I would think this bill's got a better shot at being pushed through. The legislature can push anything through, the Republican legislature that they want. They can force things through, but they don't, they don't always do that. They don't always do it that way. Like I said, they could really steamroll things, and they choose not to. It's but that's sort of the way the legislature operates, for better or for worse. Some would say for the better because you give Democrats buy-in. Some would say for the worse. Well, we elected Republicans, so why aren't we being more Republican? So there's a bunch of different schools of thoughts on that. Also, critical race theory will get a mention. We talked about that with Todd Stacey earlier in the program. The divisive concepts, ban, if you will. That's going to tie up business for a little while. And then also, another one is, there's some others that are kind of interesting. Susan Dubose's bill, State Representative Susan Dubose to ban transgender females, quote unquote, from participating in female sports at the collegiate level, not just the high school level. Which I suppose if you had a situation where you had a transgender female playing women's basketball, and they came to play Auburn or Alabama or UAB or South or whatever, that transgender female would have to sit on the bench. I saw the House just pass the bill, kind of being heralded by Riley Gaines, who was a swimmer at the University of Kentucky. We had her on the program up about 6 months ago or so. She was out stumping for Herschel Walker. But she's they got it through the House. It's, I don't know what the future holds for it in the Senate. We know Coach Tuberville really big on this and protecting the Title IX. It's funny how 30, 40 years later, it's Republicans that are singing the virtues of Title IX. When it used to be the opposite. It used to be a Democrat, sacred cow. Anyway, so if it should get out of the Senate, Biden's already vowed to veto it and kind of gave a limp-wristed statement about it. So just a very interesting that they came out this far ahead on it. Let's go to the text line. John says, Jerry Carl, you need to run the Alabama legislature if you can make it make sense of urgency the way you're saying that Congress is running. You'd have to, I would say this, John, though, if you had a Republican Senate, Republican House, and a Republican president, it would look a lot like it did in 2017 and 18. It's just nothing. And Mitch McConnell would gavel in the Senate to keep Trump from making recess appointments. They had old Luther Strange, who was serving out the rest of an abbreviated term after getting beat by Roy Moore, going up there during Christmas break and gaveling in and gaveling out so that the Trump administration couldn't use the downtime to make recess appointments. So a lot of times it's Republicans that work against Republicans. Paul says, so much corruption. Paul says a lot of things. Let's see here. Don, no, wait, hold on. A name texter says, this is why Democrats hate Trump, because he's exposing all the corruption. Their hatred for Trump, on name texter, is deeper than that. It is a mental illness deeper. I don't understand why you would be so fixated. Who would Republicans be fixated on to the level that Democrats are fixated on Trump? So Republicans are fixated on, I think, policy ideas. On Dylan Mulvaney on a beer can or whatever. They're not fixated on Obama. To some degree, there was a sort of a Clinton, Bill Clinton derangement syndrome, but luckily his wife came along and kind of filled that void. But not nothing to the level of Democrats with Trump, some degree with George W. Bush. There was a Bush derangement syndrome. There certainly was a Reagan. Probably the early one, and it's before my time on this planet, was Nixon. They really focus on the person. It's all about hypocrisy. Like I said, neither side is clean on this. But name me something that even compares to Trump derangement syndrome. Maybe Palin derangement syndrome for a while. She wasn't even in power. Like they panic. These people panic at a conservative style celebrity. They cannot fathom that. Don, good morning, Jeff. Well, good morning, Don. Always enjoy listening to Congressman Carl when he comes on your show. I certainly hope, given the opportunity, he will run for governor one day. I haven't heard that one. I haven't heard Jerry Carl for governor. I think right now it's even if Steve Marshall were to run against Lieutenant Governor Ainsworth, you still got to make Ainsworth a heavy, 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 hard favorite. Uh, Jerry, on or off the record, who was the trustee? It was the late, I don't mind sharing this with you, the late Don Langham, who called and said, was upset that the student newspaper at South Alabama endorsed John Peavy, a mayoral candidate, over Sam Jones, who ultimately won it. And I'll always like remember this because the way I did it, I was editor of the newspaper. We kind of put it up for a vote. I had all these page editors. See, like in a college paper, you have like a lifestyle editor, an opinion editor, a sports editor, news editor, all the different pages on the old broadsheet newspaper we had. I said, well, let's just vote on it. And if y'all remember that, was it 2005, I believe? It was Sam Jones who won. It was there was Ann Bedsole. There's a blast from the past. Bess Rich. John Peavy. And I was a Bess Rich fanboy back then. So that's who I wanted the paper to endorse. And I was in charge. And I could have just said we're going to endorse her. But we did it democratically. All the page editors voted and wound up being John Peavy of my page editors. And we wrote an editorial saying he was the best choice. I mean, he was the Peavy name very, very much a tied to South Alabama. He was on the city council. Anyway, so we endorsed him. And Don Langham, like a few days later, calls just irate. We would dare do that when Sam Jones was on board of trustees. And, I mean, that was like our first, like, dust up. I had just become editor, and everybody's like, sure, the right winger doing the newspaper thing. And it was just, the lesson there was, yeah, academia is pretty left wing. Sam Jones was the left-wing guy, okay? And it wasn't just an idealistic thing. It was, we're in charge, and you're going to regret that you did this thing. So that's the story there on that. Nothing ever came of it. Buck, I never eat before Parker Griffin comes on your show. If you can get to a place, Buck, where you can accept what Congressman Griffith is saying and not lose your lunch, that's a good place to be in life. You got to work on that. I'm telling you, it's not worth it. It's not worth getting that sick over. Unnamed text, Republican legislators putting forth bills in all four, but disappointment in our prisons. Where are you going to put them? Metro jail to serve the sentence? Hey, your question is as good as mine. I was talking to, I will say, a prominent left winger, head of a left wing storefront, a very prominent one in Alabama. She thinks it may be years before the federal government does anything with Alabama's prisons. There's no, so she doesn't think the sense of urgency is there. Now, 2021, we were told we had to do it now. Remember, special session, we got to do this now. We got to move, or the feds are going to come take over Alabama's prison system. But those people on the left, it really, this is what they do. They fight for prisoners' rights. They're not buying it. I'm starting not to either. Robert writes, Jeff Todd's conversion. Do any of the conversations with talking heads about CRT and DI ever include the long-term consequences of these programs on our children, our country? Mr. Stacey did not sound like he considers DI as a significant problem. Well, I think, Robert, I don't want to speak for Todd directly, but I think a lot of people, when they hear that, it sounds like a Republican boogeyman. So they just automatically discount it. Now, should they know? But there are a lot of people that think, oh, that is not really a thing. This woke stuff is not a thing. That is just conservatives. They're just trying to get a rise out of people to get their votes and get them engaged. that's what's going on here. Nothing to see here. It's just a usual conservative fear-mongering. It's sort of what Democrats did with, I don't know, Trump and Russia. Because whenever you hear that now, whenever you're saying about Trump, you're kind of like, okay, whatever. What is this, the 18th time that he's... it's the 19th time. I'm sorry, I lost track. I missed one. That he's done something that's so disgraceful and abhorrent that we must excommunicate him from the country. Well, lefties and some people that are more of the moderate persuasion, they hear DEI, they hear CRT, ESG, they're just like, oh, that's just... Some see virtue in it, don't get me wrong. They're like, we need to do more of it. But more mainstream people, that's just the latest conservative boogeyman of the week. 251-343-0106. Ascension Technologies text line. You know it. You love it. Hit us up there. We will be right back. This is FM Talk 106.5. Man again.
Or I may simply be a single drop of rain. But I will.
Folks said that I would change my mind. I'd straighten up and do just fine. I still love rock and roll. I keep on rolling with the flow.
Welcome back to the Jeff Poor Show on FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for staying with us on this Thursday morning. Broadcasting in Tuscaloosa today, not far from the University of Alabama, right off the banks of the Warrior River here. Another one of the luxurious Hampton Inns I tend to stay at when I'm on the road, but I'm speaking later today to a group here in Tuscaloosa. Hopefully it's as riveting as this radio show is. Don't put them to sleep. But always glad to get around the state. Kind of something you got to do now in your new duties of my new duties as the executive editor of a fine website called 1819 News, 1819news.com. You need to check that out. If you have it, I still got a few texts to get to, but coming up in the next segment, we'll hear from Congressman Parker Griffith, the former congressman, and for our official Democrat response of this show. Tomorrow, State Senator Chris Elliott. It looks like the economic incentives package has finally passed. There were a few no votes in the Senate. The chamber with a little more backbone than the House these days, but we'll take a look at that here. Maybe we'll try to get you a final vote tally before the conclusion of today's program. We'll see here. Or a no, Gavan and Shelnut, probably some others there. Senator Orr, the chairman of the Education Trust Fund, said nope on economic incentives. Either way, that is just going on in the State House as we speak. Jerry Carl for governor, unnamed texture. I can't stop laughing. I wouldn't laugh at it too much, unnamed texture. I would just say he probably could raise some money. His struggle wouldn't be so much as a candidate. It's just we're so tribal in Alabama, and you guys don't understand how much Birmingham matters. So is Jerry Carl your quintessential Birmingham type candidate? Kay Ivey was. But it was like a business community play. I mean, Bentley, somewhat. I think they would have got Bradley Byrne given their choice. But we had a very strange runoff between Robert Bentley and Bradley Byrne in that Republican primary in 2010. So I don't think it's that far-fetched. It could do a lot worse than Jerry Carl. Randy says, though, they would never admit it. The Democrats say game is communism. They truly believe they would rather be better off as a country. Yeah, I mean, that's they may not be there in game, but that's where this goes, right? It goes towards socialism, which Democrats will openly say is a better system where everybody gets something. But you can't expect people just to go along with these socialistic values. There's a human impulse that wants to achieve and do better. And that is not conducive to their version of equity and equality. So what do? You have to force it. That's when it becomes communism, when it's forced upon you. So I don't think they're thinking communism, but I do think that that's the logical conclusion. Unnamed texter, Obama too much, blank as Trump. Come on, Jeff, don't be like Fox. You actually have intelligence. There was way, way more Trump angst than there was Obama angst. And there was, I mean, I'm not saying that there wasn't crazy Obama derangement syndrome in some places, but it was nothing compared to Trump, unnamed texter. Monty, who is a small business owner that can't hire Wookas during the driver's license commercial? I would like to meet that voice actor too, Monty. And Buck says, Jerry Carl would suck as governor. Why do y'all hate on Jerry Carl? I think he's one of the better congressmen the first congressional district has had. I like Congressman Byrne was pretty good. I like Joe Bonner until the BP oil spill, and then he kind of showed. But we've had a lot worse in the first congressional district. Not that we've had bad. I think it might be a little, but we have had bad actually. But they predate a lot of us. But y'all are all hard on Jerry Carl. I never understood that. He's about what you want for Mobile. I assume you want a Matt Gaetz, but you know, it's just not the same kind of electorate. You gotta. Here's the deal about this: in the Florida First Congressional District, you have a transient sort of electorate. You got Eglin, and you got the naval bases. You got a lot of people coming from there to retire. I mean, you have that somewhat in the First Congressional District in Alabama, but that lends itself to give you a candidate more like a Gaetz. Here, you have a more stable voting population. It's been here a while. It understands the norms, the way you comport yourself, but not just totally oblivious to what's going on in the country. It's a good balance. That's my take on Jerry Carl. I got to get a break in here. We'll be right back. This is FM Talk 106.5.